and the like.
Well, good morning. It's good to see each and every one of you here this morning. I'm glad that we can be here on this beautiful Lord's Day, have an opportunity to open up His Word and to study from it, to open up our hearts and our minds, to sing songs of praises to His name. It is truly good to see each and every one of you here. If you're here this morning and you are visiting with us, we want to let you know that you are honored guests. We are glad to have you with us, and we would invite you back to worship with us at any opportunity that you may have. The calendar, culture, and religious community around us tell us that today is the day that we celebrate, that we remember the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And maybe that's the reason that you are here this morning. And if you are, we want to let you know that we are glad to have you here as well. We here at Northeast try to live in light of Christ's resurrection each and every day, try to keep that in our hearts and minds always, and particularly when we gather together on Sunday mornings. It is a special opportunity for us to reflect on the death and the resurrection by which He has given us life. Part of the implications, or one of the implications rather, of the resurrection is that we are now called to live resurrected lives, and that we, as Paul says in Romans chapter 6, have been raised to walk in newness of life. And part of what it means to walk in newness of life is to walk in the will and in the wisdom of God. We have been going through a series on the first Sunday morning of the month, a series that we're going to continue this morning, a series called Walking in Wisdom in 2018. We want to do what is good. We want to do what is right. We want to do what is wise in the way that we walk, in the way that we deal with the world. And in this morning's lesson, we are going to focus particularly on the subject of social media. A little over a month ago, I heard a sermon by Jeff Wilson, a preacher out of Spring, Texas. He was my preacher and Jordan's preacher growing up, at least part of the time. And he presented a lesson on this subject, on social media, and the effect that it has in our lives and in our world. And so, for the sake of full disclosure, the inspiration is coming from Jeff. The motivation, however, is coming from our very own Joe Johnson. I ironically shared Jeff's message on Facebook, on social media, and Joe heard it and asked if I would present a similar type lesson, and so I decided for us to incorporate this into our Walking in Wisdom series. Because there is a wise way in which we can use social media, and there is an unwise way. There is a foolish way, and there is a good way. And we want to be good users of our time, good users of our communication, good representations of God in this resurrected life that we are now living, even on our social media platform. So this is what we're going to be talking about this morning. And to do that, we're going to use the matrix, we're going to use the prism of those three statements that we read from Paul in our scripture reading back from 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12, 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 23. Paul said, "All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. All things are lawful, but I will not be dominated by anything." This is really going to give us the structure for our lesson as we move forward. All things are lawful, Paul says, but not all things are helpful. One of the things that social media seeks to accomplish is to provide information. It seeks to inform. It seeks to give us knowledge that we might not otherwise have had. But oftentimes what instead ends up happening is that it breeds misinformation. Tim Cook, who is the CEO of Apple, and so this is a guy that's certainly not against the tech industry. He is a leader in the tech industry, certainly not against progressive thoughts and ideas, but someone who understands that there is wisdom to be had when it comes to social media. Tim Cook said back in an interview in November, "The bigger issue is that some of these tools," speaking about social media, "some of these tools are used to divide people, to manipulate people, to get fake news to people in broad numbers so as to influence their thinking. Oftentimes what happens with social media, even though it purports that it's going to give us information, is that it spreads and provides and promotes misinformation. Maybe you've seen the news this week, or the past couple of weeks, or the past couple of years, that have talked about the role that sites like Facebook have played in providing misinformation and propaganda. But we don't even have to pay attention to those things, do we? No, we understand and we know that misinformation gets passed around on Facebook all the time. Why? Because we are so quick to see and to share, to read and to hit like, or maybe even sometimes it's just that we read a headline of an article that we like, and then we share it without actually ever reading the article. And what happens oftentimes is that it's clickbait. The title is meant to provoke. It's meant to draw attention to itself. But then you read the article and it's nothing of what it actually said. Proverbs speaks to us on these matters. Proverbs, in Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 2, it says, A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. How often do we like to talk about things that we don't actually know about? We like to give our two cents. We like to add our information into the pot, into the pool of meaning. We like to seem as though we know what we're talking about, even if we know for ourselves that we don't. And so we will share, we will comment, we will like, without actually understanding the things about which we are posting. Proverbs 18 and verse 13, it says, if one gives an answer before he hears, it is his folly and his shame. How oftentimes are we so quick to respond without actually hearing what another person has said, without actually reading an article or doing the research for ourselves to gather the necessary information to be informed about the topic which we are trying to speak on? Proverbs 18 and verse 17, it says, the one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. How often is it that you hear some shocking revelation through some news media, whether it be online or on television, and they don't quite have all the facts at first? And so maybe they're presenting and spinning a story in some way, and then later on the facts come to light and they had it all wrong. But we, in our zeal for justice and against injustice, want to share that immediately, right as we see it. And so often, we fall into the trap of thinking that the first person to speak is usually right. And so misinformation gets spread. Social media, it wants to help. It wants to add information into the pool of meaning, into our understanding. But so often, misinformation is spread. Tied to that, social media seeks to broaden our horizons. It seeks to broaden our horizons. You could have grown up in North Mississippi and never have left North Mississippi and still have friends from all over the country and even possibly all over the world. And that's the beauty of social media, is that it connects you with people that you otherwise probably would have no connection with. It allows you to experience and to know other people's cultures, other people's ideas, their ways of doing things, their thoughts, their thinking. In a way, that could be very, very helpful. Because maybe we, in our limited understanding and limited experience, don't have the full picture, don't quite understand fully. And so the more information we can get from various perspectives is helpful. But often what social media ends up being is just an echo chamber. It surrounds us with the people that we already know and like, the ideas that we already agree with. In fact, sites like Facebook work to promote ideas and people and things that we already know and agree with. They collect all of this information on us so that they can work to this purpose. And so, unfortunately, it often becomes an echo chamber. We might be hearing multiple voices, but really it's all the same voice telling us the same thing. But why is that dangerous? Well, Proverbs chapter 12 and in verse 5 says, it says, the thoughts of a righteous, of the righteous are just, but the counsels of the wicked are deceitful. There are two types of people that we could be listening to, either the righteous or the wicked. The righteous are going to give us their thoughts, and those are going to be helpful for us. The wicked are going to deceive. And who's to say whether or not we're getting the right perspective? If all we have is the same perspective that we have always heard. And so I think that's the reason why Proverbs over and over again, in places like Proverbs 11 verse 14, talk about having an abundance of counselors. It says, where there is no guidance, a people falls, but in abundance of counselors, there is safety. What's the idea? Why would you want to have an abundance of counselors? Well, it's because if you just have one person telling you something, that person might be wrong. But if you get a group of people, all with different perspectives, different vantage points, different experiences, different information to add to this pool of meaning, they can help you to come to a better understanding. But so often, social media works in exactly the opposite ways. And so while it seems to be helpful, it tries to be helpful. So often it is not. Paul says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things build up. Social media seeks to build people up. It seeks to be a platform where people can be lifted up and encouraged and elevated. But oftentimes what we find is that it works in ways that tears people down. Proverbs 12 and verse 18, it says, there is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Often what happens in social media, in our discussions and our interactions with one another, is that we don't often think about what we're saying and how we're saying it. And so we might respond in ways that are harmful, that hurt other people rather than help them and bring them healing, that cut them down rather than help. You ever consider that social media is probably not the best? Probably not the best forum for communication. In particular, when we're talking about delicate communication. Why is that? One, it's because of what we've already stated. We're often quick to speak without fully thinking about the implications of what we're saying or how we're saying it. But number two, and probably more importantly, there is no facial expression on social media. There is no body language when we're communicating on social media. Usually we're talking with people who we don't know at all or who we know very little about. And they know very little about us. And so when we say something in a certain way, they might not know our true thoughts or true feelings about that. They might not know that that's just our personality and we don't mean any harm in the way that we've responded. And so oftentimes we can cut people down, we can bite at each other, we can say things in harsh ways that harm rather than help. And let me tell you, preachers are the worst at this. I'm in a group on Facebook that is a group of preachers where we can get together, we can talk about various issues, various things, and it is often a very helpful group. Because us younger preachers can get the counsel of older preachers, and we can get all of those viewpoints that we just talked about and come to a greater understanding. But what often happens, sadly, is it's a forum for backbiting and for slandering. And preachers can really be the worst at speaking in harsh ways that harm rather than help. We need to consider how we're saying things just as much as what we're saying. But another way in which social media works in this way to tear people down is through comparison. It's through comparison. And Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 30, it says, a tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy makes the bones rot. The one who is at peace has life and is alive and is living in prosperity and contentment where he is. But the one who is envious, who is looking at other people, what they have, what they're doing, that person is rotting away in his bones. There is a quote that has been attributed, probably misattributed, to Theodore Roosevelt. But the quote is still true nonetheless. It says, "Comparison is the thief of all joy." Comparison is the thief of all joy. Why is that? We consider in our interactions on social media, what often happens is we post just what we want people to see. We post what we want people to see. And so what that means is we might take 10,000 shots just to get the right picture. We apply the filters that are going to put us in the best light. Or maybe we don't want that much light because for whatever we're trying to cover up. Maybe it is that we're trying to crop out something that we don't want people to see. The point is we can put our best face, our best foot forward on social media. And what that often does for other people when they see that is they see, well, that person's life is perfect and my life just can't compare. And so I must just be inadequate. All the messiness in my life cannot compare to the perfection in theirs. And so it grinds at us. It drives us away. And comparison often leads to discontentedness and to covetousness, to that envy that Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 30 talks about. I'm going to call this the Joanna Gaines effect. I love Fixer Upper. I love what they stand for. I love what they do. But here's what happens inevitably. Joanna makes over a house. She puts up some shiplap and some open shelving. She posts that on her Instagram. And what happens is many of you probably, and even myself included, we see that and we think, my life is incomplete. My house is not right. I cannot be happy until I have more shiplap in my house, until my shelves are more open. And so we go about making these changes in our lives. And then we, in turn, post these pictures to social media. Somebody else sees that and they say, there's not enough shiplap in my life. I don't have enough open shelving. I'm not going to be happy until I make these changes. And whether we're talking about our homes or our clothes or the events that we're doing, maybe we're not doing enough fun things. It looks like everybody is doing fun things on social media. And that their life is always full of joy and happiness and all of these good things, and our life cannot compare to that. I get really envious when I look at my friends that have kids in a similar age range as Emerson. You know, their kids are always in bed by 7 o'clock. They sleep 12 hours. They eat every meal. Never have a dirty diaper. That's not real life. But what that does to us is we look at that and we start to compare and we start to become discontented with where we are. And it tears us down. It eats us up. Another way this works, even though it's trying to build up, social media seeks to connect us, but instead it pulls us, it often pulls us further apart. And before we even get into that, we need to ask, yes, we're being connected, but connected at what cost? And how are they going about it? They gather all sorts of information about where we shop, what we buy, what we talk about, what we read, what we post, who we talk to and communicate with, so that they can better connect us to people and places and things that we might like. And while on the surface that might seem like a good thing, that can often be very invasive. Have you ever shopped for something on Amazon or something else on the internet? And then the next time you go to Facebook, you've got an advertisement for that very thing or that very place? It's a little creepy. Kelly is proctoring quizzes for me, and he gets emails from the graduate assistant who's sending out the quizzes. Kelly doesn't know this person from Adam. And yet now Facebook has told Kelly that they should be friends because Facebook has looked at his contacts and his email and connected the two. And so again, you may have seen in the news lately that there is a lot of discussion around all of the interworkings about actually how Facebook is working in this regard. We also need to ask, what are the negative consequences of this constant connection and communication? I want to read for you a quote that was given by the vice president of Facebook in an internal email. Now, this was leaked, but this is what he said. He said, "We connect people, period. That's why all the work that we do in growth is justified. All of the questionable contact importing practices, all the subtle language that helps people stay searchable by friends, all the work that we do to bring more communication in." Later on, he said, "So we connect more people. And that can be bad if they make it negative. Maybe it costs someone a life by exposing someone to bullies. Maybe someone dies in a terrorist attack coordinated on our tools. And still we connect people. The ugly truth is that we believe in connecting people so deeply that anything that allows us to connect more people more often is the de facto good. It is perhaps the only area where the metrics do tell the true story as far as we are concerned." Now, in light of the leak and that coming out, he has come back and said that he really did not believe that he said that in order to provoke discussion for how to improve their product and make it better so that these things weren't happening. And so that's what he said, and so I'm going to take him at his word. But still, what this betrays and what this says to us is that these tools that we use, these things that we're using to connect us, can often be used in ways that are very harmful, very hurtful, even costing people their lives. It often seeks to divide, to pull us apart, rather than to connect us. Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 28 talks about gossip. And it says, "A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends." Gossip was a problem before Facebook was ever invented. But how much more so now that at the type of a few keystrokes, we can communicate to someone in relative anonymity, we think, thinking that that might never get back to that person. And yet what often happens is it blows up in our face and it causes great fights and quarrels among people. And that alone should tell us we need to be wise in the way that we use it. But there's another way in this just works. You notice the superficial relationships we tend to have now? You notice how people can't really talk to each other anymore, can't actually have a conversation. We speak in emoji rather than actual words, in paragraphs and sentences. Proverbs 18 and verse 24, it says, "A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." It's not about how many Facebook friends we have. It's not about how many people we're connected with across the country, across the globe. Because ultimately, a lot of those relationships lack substance. They're shallow. They're not helpful for us in the grand scheme of things. We need those close friends who can be there for us to help us in our time of need. And that's what Proverbs 27 verse 10 says. It says, "Do not forsake your friend and your father's friend. And do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away." So often we can get so engrossed in our relationships online with the people that we see and communicate with through social media that our relationships in the present suffer. And so you see that around the dinner table. Maybe you're out to eat. Or maybe you've noticed this in your own home. Everybody's on their cell phone. And I think it kind of used to be a thing where it was just the kids that were doing that and parents had to get onto them for being on their cell phone, being on social media while they were eating. But now it's something that you observe, and it doesn't matter what age we're talking about. Everybody's on their phones. Nobody is talking to each other. Nobody's looking at each other. And so the relationships in the present suffer for the virtual, for the online. And so we miss being in the moment. because we want to catalog. We want to share. We want to post our food, what we're doing, who we're doing it with. But oftentimes we make that our reality rather than what's right in front of us. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. All things are lawful, but I will not be dominated by anything. We have often become what God, through the prophet Isaiah, condemned the people in his day for becoming. Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 8 says, "Their land is filled with idols. They bow down to the work of their hands, to what their own fingers have made." Bow down to what their own fingers have made, what they've crafted with their hands. The tools have become the master. And how often does that happen with social media? That it dominates our time, it dominates our attention, it dominates who we are, it controls who we are and who we try to be. There was another Facebook executive who said, after leaving Facebook, he told this to a group of graduate students at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, that the social network could be destroying how society works. And it's doing it through short-term, dopamine-driven feedback loops. And later he said, "I would encourage all of you how to internalize this. If you feed the beast will destroy you." That's an ex-executive of Facebook. That's a person who helped build this thing. And he's saying that what it's doing, it's destroying how society works. And it's doing it through these chemicals that are released in our head. Dopamine is a neurochemical. And it is often known as the reward molecule. It is what is released after we've completed a workout, or after we've achieved a goal, or after we've done something that we set out to do. And we have that sense of reward, of happiness, of satisfaction. That's what happens. That's what happens when what we share has been liked or commented on, or when people have read what we've posted. There is that chemical that's released in our head. And oftentimes what that does is it creates something of a high for us, and it keeps us coming back and wanting more and more. And very quickly, very subtly, we become the frogs in the proverbial boiling pot. And we are taken captive by this. One thing about social media that's interesting is that it seeks to liberate. It seeks to give us freedom. Particularly, it seeks to give us freedom in our time. We can communicate with people quicker and faster. It does not take as much time to do so. And so it purports to give us more free time. But the reverse is often true. It takes all of our free time up. It devours it. It takes it away. The average person spends nearly 2 hours on social media per day. 116 minutes to be exact. Do you know what that is over the span of a lifetime? That's 5 years and 4 months. That is more time than we will spend eating and drinking. And it is only getting more and more. It takes up all of our time. We have this nag to check our phones, to see, has somebody commented, has somebody posted, has somebody liked what I posted? It takes up all of our time. And so we need to follow the wisdom of Psalm 90 in verse 12, where the psalmist says there, "Teach us to number our days, that we might get a heart of wisdom." And the psalmist says that in a context of the fact that we are going to be judged one day. And so how we live in this life matters to God. And so we need to number our days. We need to count the minutes, count the seconds. Realize that this life is fleeting. And live accordingly. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 10 says, "Go to the ant, O sluggard, consider her ways, and be wise. Without having a chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and want will come upon you like an impoverished man." Solomon very well could have said, "A little Facebook, a little Twitter, a little YouTube to pass the time, and destruction will be yours." Maybe it's a minute here, 10 minutes there, 30 seconds here. It adds up throughout our day. And we need to be careful about how we're using that time, because very quickly it will devour us. It will consume us. Social media seeks to provide for self-expression. But instead it tends to promote conformity. Does anybody remember MySpace? Who was on MySpace? Can I just get a show of hands? Okay, a few of us. MySpace was cool. And MySpace was cool because it was customizable. You could express yourself in many ways. You could change the layout and the design of your page. You could even have music, like a song that came on when somebody visited your page. And so whatever your favorite song was, you put that on and everybody could identify that with you. And so it sought to be this tool for self-expression. And Facebook works in much the same way. But you know what happened? They created this feature where you could have your four favorite friends right on your page for everybody to see. And that was a pretty big deal. You had to spend some time thinking about who are your four favorite people. Who, you know, should you put your mom in there? Or you're not going to look very cool if you do that, but you really want to tell your mom she's not one of your favorites? Yeah. I didn't friend my mom on Facebook, so that wasn't an issue for me, or on MySpace. But a lot of thought went into who your friends were and who you put in those categories. And even though it was a forum and a platform for self-expression, often what happens is we put a song on there, we put a background, we put our layout, we chose the friends based on what we wanted people to see, based on what they would think of it. Oftentimes, how social media works is, it's really herd mentality. We care what other people think, we care what other people are going to say, we care what other people are going to react to how we post, what we say, what we write. And eventually we become conformed to everybody else. And so we need to follow Paul's wisdom. In Romans chapter 12 and in verse 2, when he says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." To be conformed is to be shaped. It's to be molded. And that's often what happens on social media. As we mold, we form this picture that people want to see, that people will be pleased with, so that we'll get more likes, more subscription, more shares, so that more traffic will be driven to our pages. Often we end up just becoming like everybody else. And it should be obvious to us why that's an issue for us as Christians. Because of what we like is determined by what the world sees, what the world thinks about us. What we post, what we share, what we say, what we don't say is determined by what people are going to say, what they're going to think about us. That's going to affect greatly our witness and our work in the kingdom. All things are lawful for me, but Paul says, I will not be dominated by anything. And yes, that even includes our habits on social media. We can circle back to Tim Cook. Tim Cook, he doesn't use Facebook. Facebook. And in fact, even though he didn't have any kids, he said that if he did have a kid, he wouldn't let them use Facebook or social media. And in fact, he influences his nephew as much as he can to try to steer away from social media. Because he recognizes all of these dangers, all of these things that we've talked about. While it tries to help, it often hurts. While it tries to build up, it often tears down. While it tries to give us freedom, it ends up dominating our lives. And so for him, the good does not outweigh the bad. The danger is too great. And so he's made the decision that he has, and many people have as well. Jordan and I took the last month off of social media, really just to see if we could do it. And it was very beneficial for us in a lot of ways. It helped us in a lot of ways. When we were eating, we weren't sitting on our phones, not talking to each other, looking at what everybody else was saying. We were focused on each other. When we were sitting, it just gave us time to be able to talk rather than to be distracted by everything that was out there. We're going to get back on social media, but we're going to use it in a wise way, in a very limited way. You know, it can be good. We have our group, Friends at Northeast, and that's a good forum for us to post needs and concerns and things that are going on with the congregation among us that probably wouldn't get out as quickly if we were using email or snail mail or phone calls. And so we're still going to use it in a way that's helpful. I'll still post some things now and again. You may have noticed I don't post much on Facebook publicly. And I hope there's some wisdom in that. But let's talk about how we use Facebook wisely. Let's talk about how we use social media in a wise way. Because let's be honest, it is a part of our world now, whether we like it or not. And so here are three ways to use it wisely. Number one, be discerning with what you read, with what you share. You turn with me to Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 28. Proverbs 21 and verse 28, it says, a false witness will perish, but the word of a man who hears will endure. When we think of a false witness, we typically think of someone who is maliciously spreading lies, someone who is trying to deceive purposefully. Part of understanding the wisdom of Proverbs is understanding the contrast and the comparisons that are made. And here you notice that the false witness is set over against the person who hears, the person who listens, the person who understands. And that says something to us about the first point that we made, about all the misinformation that's being spread. Oftentimes, we can be false witnesses unintentionally, unknowingly, by not investigating enough the things that we're reading, the things that we're sharing. And so this helps stop that spread of misinformation. The echo chamber that often happens. We need to read with discernment. We need to share and post with discernment. Don't just read a headline and think, that sounds good, I'm going to think I'm going to post that article. Be discerning. Number two, we need to think before we type, like, opposed. Proverbs has a lot to say about speaking rashly. We already read Proverbs 12 and verse 18. Proverbs 15 and verse 28 has something to say about this as well. Proverbs 15 and verse 28, it says, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. We need to think about what we're going to say, what we're going to type, what we're going to post, and how that's going to be perceived, what message that is going to send, what we are going to communicate in that. Thirdly and finally, we need to number our days, we need to count our minutes. We need to take the wisdom that we gain from the ant. We need to take the wisdom that we gain from the psalmist. Recognize that this life is fleeting, it is passing. And that there are some uses of our time that are good and that are wise, that are helpful, and there's some that aren't. and watching cat videos is not a good use of our time. And let's face it, one cat video leads to another, and then to another, and then to another. And then you gotta watch a dog video to balance it out, because let's be honest, we gotta be fair and not discriminatory in the videos that we watch. And so maybe we budget our time. Maybe we be intentional and say, I'm not going to check Facebook while I'm at work, while I'm at school, or while it's family time, while I'm at dinner. Maybe we say, 10 minutes, 15 minutes today, and that's all I need. And we stick to that. Maybe it's an hour, and if it's an hour, that's fine, but make a plan and stick to it. And make sure if you're using that hour, you're doing it wisely, in a way that is helpful, a way that's beneficial, in a way that you know is not domineering over your life. The question that each and every one of us need to ask is, are we using social media wisely? Are we using it in a way that we are bringing glory and honor to God? Whether divine presence or our online presence. We may present a disembodied person as we communicate online, but we need to realize that even as we type, as we write, as we post, as we share, as we read, as we watch, we're to bring glory and honor to God. I hope this lesson has been helpful for you in some way. I hope that it has caused some thought in you, as it has in me, that we need to be wise about how we use social media. We need to be wise about how we use our time, the way that we communicate with one another. Because oftentimes we might think that we're helping, think that we're building up, think that we are allowing for freedom and being freed by the social media that we use. But in fact, it's often working in the very opposite way. Hope this lesson has been helpful for you in some way. If you're here this morning, not a child of God, realize that resurrected life that we talked about, Jesus died for our sins. He was risen so that we might have life. And not only so that we might have life in the life to come, but so that we might have life in the here and now. Eternity begins today. God cares about how you walk in the here and now. Will you walk with Him? Will you walk wisely? If you're here this morning, you need to begin your walk with Christ, your walk with God. You need to put Him on through baptism, which is the dying to self, the living to God. The appeal to God for a good conscience, knowing that He cleanses us from our sins so that we might walk in His ways. Maybe that's your need here this morning. Maybe you're here this morning and you are a child of God, but social media has dominated your life. Maybe something else has dominated your life and you need to repent of that. Maybe we can help you with that in some way. Maybe we can pray for you, lift you up, encourage you. If you're here this morning, you have any need. We can help you in any way. We ask to come forward now as we stand, as we sing.